Absolutely. Love this guy right here, man.
Yes, sir.
And all those guys that came before, love you too, man. It's all, this is what it's all about. What a great team, great coaches. Appreciate every bit of it.
I mean, we never lost faith. I think that's the biggest thing. Everybody on this team, no one had their head down. And we believed in each other, and that's what we preached all year long. And we got this guy right here to get us here, and we found a way to get it in the end.
The Kansas City Chiefs just won their first Super Bowl in half a century, cementing the legend of Patrick Mahomes and the legacy of Andy Reid. But before the fourth quarter, it looked like San Francisco had the game in the bag. Today, what went wrong with the Niners after their early success? And how the Chiefs pulled off a comeback for the ages? I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, February 3rd. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Bill, as we speak, the Kansas City Chiefs are out celebrating in Miami. I imagine we're going to see many videos of Travis Kelce dancing at the club. Meanwhile, here's how Coach Andy Reid is celebrating tonight.
I'm going to go get the biggest cheeseburger you've ever seen. Prime, the biggest one. And might be a double.
Honestly, Mina, I was hoping there was just going to be a sack of cheeseburgers in the Gatorade cooler and they were going to dump it on Andy Reid. That was not only my personal dream in a lot of ways for myself, but also for Andy Reid, who I just absolutely respect. And I'm so excited he won a Super Bowl.
Bill Barnwell is a senior football writer at ESPN and the host of The Bill Barnwell Show. So, Bill, this game really was a tale of three quarters and then the fourth quarter, which was very, very different. With 15 minutes left in this game, Kansas City was down 20-10. Now, normally, when you've got Patrick Mahomes, that's basically nothing, as we've seen so far in the postseason. But in this game, at that point, he had been struggling and making uncharacteristic errors so that it actually did feel like the game might be out of reach. How did he pull off the comeback?
Yeah, man, I think the Niners may have been one stop away, really one play away from possibly sealing up this football game. And it was the absolute bottom of the game for them in terms of their win expectancy, according to ESPN's metrics. A 3.9% chance of winning. They were down 20-10. And faced a 3rd-and-15 from their own 35-yard line with 7:35 to go in the fourth quarter. If the Niners held, they were going to get the ball back to that running game, which had been very effective. They had a 10-point lead. Very good chance they seal up that game on the ensuing drive. And then Patrick Mahomes morphed back into the guy who has been absolutely incredible throughout this postseason. He got some time to throw. He hit Tyreek Hill for 44 yards on 3rd-and-15.
Here they come, Mahomes. Stepping up. He's throwing long downfield for Tyreek Hill. Got it at the 20-yard line and then spun down there. The first giant chunk of the game.
From that point forward, we got the Chiefs offense that had blown the Texans and Titans away. They scored two touchdowns in the red zone. They converted each of their meaningful third down opportunities. And Mahomes hit big plays not only to Tyreek Hill, but also on a pass interference penalty to Travis Kelce and then to Sammy Watkins over Richard Sherman, to the delight of one Darrell Revis. The Niners were great on defense for the vast majority of this game. Jimmy Garoppolo outplayed Patrick Mahomes for the vast majority of this game. And then they allowed three touchdowns on three drives. And that was that.
Throughout the game, you and I were messaging, and we were both perplexed by what we were seeing from Mahomes. It was his first game with multiple interceptions since 2018. It was only the second time all season, Bill, that he had not thrown a passing touchdown through three quarters. Simply put, he did not look like Patrick Mahomes. He looked rattled. And he looked rattled because the 49ers pass rush was absolutely mauling the Chiefs offensive line. What changed in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going through my play-by-play notes that I took as I was watching this game, there were so many times through those first three quarters where I mentioned just to myself that a Mahomes pass was fluttering or it looked bad coming out of his hand. He'd taken a bunch of big hits earlier in the game. And really, for most of this game, the Chiefs did very little on offense. There was a big chunk of this game where the only thing they were really doing was checking down to Damian Williams, and Mahomes was scrambling on the plays where the Niners pass rush, which had been very effective, weren't disciplined in their rush lanes. And I think the Niners pass rush just got tired late in the fourth quarter. They had a track record during the regular season, when you look at the numbers, of struggling in the fourth quarter. With a lead of 10 points or less during the regular season, the Niners ranked second in QBR allowed during the first three quarters of the game. They were 27th in the same category during the fourth quarter. And I mentioned that on Scott Van Pelt's show on Tuesday last week, and I kind of figured it might be an issue, but I mean, this is obviously the most dramatic example of the pass rush slowing down that we have seen all year.
Well, until that final quarter, as you mentioned, the Niners' offense looked better than the Chiefs' offense. Now, I think we would have expected them to have more success running the ball, given how both offenses had looked so far in the postseason. But outside of that one interception, Jimmy Garoppolo was outplaying Patrick Mahomes, which I don't think anyone saw coming, right? I mean, at one point, he was 11 for 12 off of play action. Even after the interception, Bill, when you thought Kyle Shanahan might take the ball out of his hands, he was actually throwing it pretty well. How did the Chiefs defense turn things around and start stopping him in the fourth quarter?
The pass rush the Niners lost seemed to somehow make their way to the Chiefs. I mean, Nick Bosa, in my opinion, was the best player in this game for about 3.5 quarters. And over the final 8 minutes, Chris Jones was the best player in the game. He knocked down two passes, including a crucial second down pass. He pressured Garoppolo a bunch of times. Garoppolo just crumbled when the Chiefs got pressure on him in this game. He had 31 yards, two sacks, and two interceptions on the 11 times he was pressured. And on the whole, in the fourth quarter, Jimmy Garoppolo was 3 of 11 for 36 yards with a garbage time interception and a sack on fourth down. I mean, it's probably too simplistic. It probably doesn't come down to strictly these two plays. But if you want to tell the story of this game in two plays, on 3rd and 15, when his team absolutely needed a big play, Patrick Mahomes hit a 44-yard pass to Tyreek Hill, and that turned the game around. And then on 3rd and 10, later in the fourth quarter at midfield, Emmanuel Sanders was open by a step and a half on a deep post, and Jimmy Garoppolo missed the throw. If he hits that throw, it's probably the game-winning touchdown. Instead, he missed the throw on third down, took a sack on fourth down, and the Chiefs scored a couple plays later to seal up the game.
Bill, all week long on all of the various debate shows, we have been asked, if you put the ball in Jimmy Garoppolo's hands, can he win the game for you? After the game, Kyle Shanahan was asked about his quarterback's performance, and he sounded, well, kind of lukewarm.
I mean, I think he did some real good things. When I see the tape, I'll find out more, but I thought Jimmy played all right.
Does this game change your perception of Jimmy Garoppolo at all?
I don't think it changes it as much as it just reinforces it in terms of where he stands in the tiers of NFL quarterbacks, right? I mean, throughout the postseason, we've seen guys like Kirk Cousins and Ryan Tannehill who looked great when their offenses were running the ball effectively and they could throw off of play action. When they had to throw to catch up and get back in a game, they were not able to take over. Garoppolo was really good for most of this game. Even with that one interception, he was fantastic, I thought, until the fourth quarter. But then, even at the same time, it's pretty telling that Kyle Shanahan didn't want to try and move the ball with nearly a full two-minute drive opportunity before halftime. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is sort of what we saw. He's limited. He has the upside where when the offense is moving the ball in other ways, he can contribute to that. But you don't want to have to put the game on his shoulders. And it's totally crazy, but it's worth mentioning because it's fun. The Niners could get out of Jimmy Garoppolo's contract this offseason with virtually no dead money. And there's a free agent by the name of Tom Brady who decided draw attention to himself during Super Bowl week as possibly leaving the Patriots. He grew up as a 49ers fan. The Niners, I would say it's fair to say, have a better roster than the Patriots at this point. And I mean, there's a 0.0001% chance that's happening. But if Jimmy Garoppolo hits that throw to Emmanuel Sanders, it's a 0% chance. And because it's not a 0% chance, it's at least worth mentioning that there's at least a possibility, a tiny possibility, that if you're Kyle Shanahan and you feel that way about Jimmy Garoppolo, you might consider talking to Tom Brady this offseason.
Hulu is headquartered in California. Such a trolley thing for you to bring up. Well, speaking of trolling, after the break, let's talk about Kyle Shanahan's Super Bowl record and whether he deserves criticism for how this game played out.
The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So, Bill, let's talk about Kyle Shanahan.
Oh, boy.
This wasn't 28-3, but it is the second Super Bowl he's been to where his team's win probability chart looks like the EKG of someone dying a painful and surprising death. He has now been outscored 46-0 with 10 minutes left in 2 Super Bowls. By the way, as I say that out loud, it sounds ridiculous because his defenses are the ones who are getting outscored, but that's neither here nor there. How much blame does he deserve? After the game, Tyrann Mathieu said he was grateful that the Niners stopped running it so much and started throwing the ball. Again, speaking of trolling, do you think that's fair?
Yes and no. I think Shanahan cost them this game in some ways, but I don't know that it's that play calling where they didn't run the ball quite as much. Because you look at the actual plays in the fourth quarter, they weren't too unreasonable. The first drive of the fourth quarter, they end up in 3rd and 14. They have to throw. It was a false start penalty, a run for 1 yard on first down. So they're in 2nd and long. We always criticize coaches for throwing the ball on 2nd and long. And then 3rd and long gets even 3rd and longer, and then Garoppolo scrambles for a couple yards. The next drive, it's 2017. They run the ball on first down for 5 yards. Maybe you argue they should have run the ball on 2nd and 5. That seems to be the play people are upset about, but you actually watch the dots on that play, or you watch the tape on that play if you're so inclined. The Niners had George Kittle matched up against Terrell Suggs, who's an edge rusher who's approximately 47 years old, in pass coverage. That's a great matchup. You want to throw that matchup. And the throw was knocked down. And on the next play, Kittle was open again, but Garoppolo didn't see him and threw to a covered receiver. And then on the following drive, they're down. They pretty much have to throw the football after the 2-minute warning. They even ran the ball to start that drive. So I don't think the play calling was particularly egregious. I think Kyle Shanahan lost this game instead with his decision making before the fourth quarter even began. He was coaching like he wanted to keep this game close instead of trying to score points. In the first half, I mentioned it earlier, the Niners stopped the Chiefs with 1:48 to go. They have 3 timeouts. It's the end of the first half, so they can call a timeout, get the ball back, and have time to drive. Instead, they let the clock run. Chiefs punt, they run the ball once, they let the clock run even further. Only then did they try and start moving the ball, and Garoppolo hit a 20-yard completion and then a perfect 42-yard pass to George Kittle that was called back for what I think it's fair to say is a questionable offensive pass interference call.
What a catch he made right over Daniel Sorensen to get the 49ers into field goal range.
I think there's going to be a hold on the 49ers right here, and it's only a 3-man rush, and it's Frank Clark on
pass
Mike McGlinchey.
Offense number 85.
The Niners were happy to go into halftime at 10-10, but they had been really effective moving the ball on offense outside of that one Garoppolo interception. That, to me, is too conservative.
That's something I found interesting about Shanahan for a while now, Bill. He's undeniably one of the most forward-thinking coaches in the NFL when it comes to play calling, but he does sometimes have a tendency to manage the game a little conservatively. I was reminded of the Niners game against the Ravens this year. At the end of the first half, he mismanaged the clock a bit, and they ended up having to try for a long field goal and lost 20-17. They also have the second fewest attempts at converting fourth downs in the NFL this season. Even through three quarters, you know, with their potent rushing attack, they didn't attempt many.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even throughout the playoffs this year, there were moments where Kyle Shanahan kicked field goals or was conservative in moments where you'd figure, hey, your rushing offense looks incredible. Why don't you run the football here when the Packers and the Vikings can't stop you? But it didn't come back to bite him because he wasn't playing the Kansas City Chiefs. In the second half of this game, the Niners were averaging 7.6 yards per play on offense. Shanahan chose to kick a field goal on 4th-and-2 from the Kansas City 24-yard line with the game tied. It was an awful call at the time. It only looks worse now. You have to keep scoring in those moments because there's always a chance that Patrick Mahomes is suddenly going to get hot and become Patrick Mahomes. And you want to have as many points as possible before that happens. We saw that with the Texans where they kicked a field goal to make it 20-0, right? Or something in that range. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they were down before halftime in that game. I don't know that is the difference in this game. Of course, the Chiefs did win by 11, but one of those touchdowns was a pretty much garbage time score by Damian Williams. If Shanahan manages that first half situation and the 4th-and-2 differently, this game is totally different late in the fourth quarter. And it's especially galling because Andy Reid, his clock management, his decision-making was a punchline for years and years and years. Analytics Andy did it. He got aggressive with two key fourth quarter decisions. Early in the game, he was facing a 4th-and-1 from the San Francisco 5-yard line, down 3-0. He even sent his field goal unit out to tie the game during an injury timeout there. And then he changed his mind. He put the offense back on the field. They scored a touchdown two plays later. On the next drive, he converted another 4th-and-1 in the red zone. Andy Reid suddenly figured it out. It was such a wonderful, heartwarming thing to see. And it was the difference in this game. And with Kyle Shanahan, I mean, I do think he is an absolute play calling genius in a lot of ways. But we saw this with Sean McVay last year, where Sean McVay was a genius, but also very conservative when it came to his decision making. And it came back to bite him in a close game last year, and it came back to bite Kyle Shanahan today.
Bill, I was watching from home, of course. So when I read on Twitter that Andy was sending out the field goal unit, I tweeted, "I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed." I like to think he read my tweet and then changed his mind. Well, and while we're talking about Andy Reid or analytics Andy, let's praise him for a bit.
I mean, he's one of the greatest coaches of all time. I don't think he needed the Lombardi Trophy to prove that. But just to do that, I mean, it puts all doubt aside. And he's going to be listed as one of the all-time great coaches in history whenever he wants to be done, which I hope is not anytime soon.
He's widely beloved throughout the NFL, and everyone knows how extensive his impact has been both on the game of football and on coaches and executives throughout the league. How would you say this Super Bowl win affects his legacy?
To me, you know, it's the last thing on his resume for the Hall of Fame, right? I think he was a Hall of Famer anyway. But now, even if you're a hater, you can't deny that Andy Reid is one of the most important coaches in NFL history. When the league has changed in his image since he took over as a head coach, that doesn't mean Hawaiian shirts a lot of the time, but people thought he was crazy when he took over as Eagles head coach, because they threw the ball about 60% of the time. That was way more than the league average. Now, the entire league throws the ball about 60% of the time. He built the Eagles into a perennial contender and a Super Bowl winning organization when they won with a head coach who was his protege and a quarterback in Nick Foles, who he convinced not to retire. Now, he's won one with the Chiefs. He's 7th in NFL history in regular season wins. He's an integral part of the NFL over the last 20 years. I mean, he's overshadowed by Bill Belichick. No, he's not Bill Belichick. Nobody is. But this is one of the best coaches in NFL history. And now you can't deny Andy Reid. He's going to get his due as one of those coaches.
Well, the Chiefs won. The confetti is probably still lying around Hard Rock Stadium, but I already want to talk about next year. I imagine Kansas City will be a favorite to come back, but the team could look somewhat different or faces new challenges given that they're going to have to pay Patrick Mahomes an amount of money I imagine is larger than the GDP of many small countries. Meanwhile, Chris Jones, their star pass rusher, who also made some big plays today, is probably the top defensive free agent on the market. So let me ask you this, Bill. Do you think the Chiefs can keep their window open?
I'm not counting Patrick Mahomes out for anything at any point, I think, for the next 15 years. I think that this is a talented team around Patrick Mahomes, but I think a lot of the guys they have are going to come back. I mean, Frank Clark is under contract. Tyrann Mathieu is under contract. The offensive line is under contract. They're probably going to move on from Sammy Watkins. I don't think that's an enormous problem for them in terms of replacing him. He was good in this game. He was good during the postseason. But I think they can bring back Chris Jones if they're so inclined, or they could trade him and maybe sign somebody else. And I mean, Patrick Mahomes is going to get a huge raise, but he's still going to be underpaid. I mean, he's still going to make less than he would make on the open market if he was a free agent. He is going to be a bargain no matter how much he gets, pretty much, from the Kansas City Chiefs. So I do think that given what we see elsewhere in the AFC West, where you have the Chargers in transition, the Raiders are still struggling to some extent, the Broncos are going to start Drew Lock next year. They're prohibitive favorites to win the AFC West. And then with Mahomes, we know in the postseason, there's no lead that anyone else can get that they're not going to be able to match. So I think it's going to come down to how hot Patrick Mahomes gets when the game is on the line in the postseason, which was pretty hot this year.
All right, Bill, I'm going to go celebrate by eating some sweet and sour pork.
I'm going to have a Gatorade cooler full of hamburgers.
Coming up, why there's still one team without a single player in the Hall of Fame and why I think that's a mistake. Now you can win a $250,000 home renovation designed by the Scott Brothers in an ADT smart home security system. To enter, just head to ADT.com/pass the protection and tell us what you want to protect. A beautiful home is great, but a safer home is even better. Now's your opportunity to get both. The winner and the winner's home will be featured in an ADT video with the Scott Brothers. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Ends March 16th. Must be 18 or over and a homeowner as of February 1st, 2020. To learn more about the contest and read the official rules, go to ADT.com/pass the protection. Here's another story I want you to know. This weekend, before the Super Bowl, five modern era NFL players were accepted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Troy Polamalu, Steve Atwater, Isaac Bruce, Steve Hutchinson, and Edgerrin James. All are incredibly deserving, but I was disappointed to see that, thanks to an omission on the list, the Jacksonville Jaguars are still the only team without a signature player in the Hall of Fame, and that omission is left tackle Tony Boselli. Now, the reason why Boselli, who made the top 10 list for the third year in a row, isn't in the Hall is obvious. He played just 91 games over the course of seven seasons before retiring due to injuries in 2002. It's hard for players to get in with shorter careers, though it has happened before. Terrell Davis, for example, was inducted with just 78 games under his belt. But he also played a much more prominent position with statistics that are easier for people to comprehend. And that's why I think Boselli is being overlooked. Yes, he was a five-time Pro Bowler with three All-Pro seasons and a member of the 1990s All-Decade team, but it can be hard to quantify dominant offensive line play. And Boselli, who was drafted second overall in the 1995 draft out of USC, was truly, truly dominant. For evidence, go look up highlights from the Jaguars' first ever playoff game against the Buffalo Bills in 1996. Boselli went one-on-one with first ballot Hall of Famer Bruce Smith, who's widely regarded as one of the best pass rushers to ever do it, and he absolutely stonewalled him.
Tony Boselli is just doing an excellent job with Bruce Smith. Whether Bruce wants to go hard inside, he can take him. Here he's lined up out in space, tries to come up the field to create the angle. Boselli just stones him.
Smith himself has vouched for Boselli to enter the Hall, which is about as good an endorsement as an offensive lineman can get. Now, it wasn't all bad news for the Jaguars this weekend. Current stud defensive end Calais Campbell was named Walter Payton Man of the Year, which is an award that honors excellence on and off the field, marking a first for the organization. But it's got a sting for Jags fans to see Boselli go unrecognized. I understand that his case is a bit complicated, but dominance should trump all. It's not the Hall of Very Good or the Hall of Longevity. And while Boselli didn't play forever, he made his career count more than most. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.